America Unfiltered, a fresh, raw look at American politics, foreign policy, and media. With me, Liam Kennedy in Dublin.
And me, Scott Lucas in Birmingham in the UK.
In the last episode of America Unfiltered, we focused on a very dramatic Trump show. We had the president's resurrection in hospital, we had the famous balcony scene, and of course, we had the unmasking. Well, we're frazzled. This is live PTSD. This episode, we're going to draw our eyes away from the compulsively watchable political car crash that is the Trump show. We're going to consider how Joe Biden is campaigning and the prospects for the Democratic Party more generally in the coming election. Scott, how is Joe Biden doing?
Pretty solid so far. Joe Biden is not the most, let's say, dynamic of political candidates. He's not necessarily a headline grabber, certainly not the way that the spectacle that Donald Trump is. But you don't need that right now. You need to hit those ideas of leadership, responsibility, and unity, comparing that with the mismanagement, the disorganization of Trump amidst the pandemic, economic downturn, social and racial issues. And Biden, who had a terrible start to the Democratic primaries, you might remember, who we thought might be out of the race early this year, he has kept it pretty much in line since the Democratic National Convention last month, aided by Kamala Harris, who has been more than steady, has actually been extremely good, dynamic, powerful as the vice presidential nominee, and by the Democratic candidates for Congress, including some high-profile challengers to take Senate seats from the Republicans. So it's not the thing that's going to get you up in the morning to look at the PTSD moments that we have to live through, but the Democrats don't want PTSD right now. They just want a nice, steady, as it were, move towards November the 3rd, and hopefully a steady move out of it with a victory in the White House and in Congress.
Yeah, that steadiness, I think that is absolutely key, isn't it, to Biden and what people see in him and why they're turning to him, or turning back perhaps even to the Democratic Party as well. But I just wonder then if that really is that really the core of his campaign? Is that all of his campaign? I mean, does the policy even matter that much? I was wondering that over the weekend, and I have to admit, for the first time, I actually went and looked up the Biden campaign's website, and I came away from that with two thoughts. The first thought was about policy. There's real content and there's real meat. Huge amount of thoughts going into this. Interesting balance between the more progressive and more centrist views in the party clearly are working their way into policy. I was impressed with a number of areas, particularly around healthcare, around climate, where, for example, we have a strong plan to eliminate greenhouse gas by 2050. But at the same time, you see Biden has been a little bit careful around the Green New Deal. He doesn't want to get tagged to it too closely, but he wants parts of it. For example, he'll end fossil fuel subsidies. But on the other hand, he's making it pretty clear he's not going to end fracking in Pennsylvania because that's not going to be very healthy for him. So there's a balancing act, but there is substance. There clearly is. Where I had some doubts is when I looked at the top of the campaign page and the rhetoric of the campaign, I thought it was kind of tired sounding. Things like America is an idea, no more malarkey, battle for the soul of the nation, restore the soul of America. I mean, come on, this is old stuff. There's even a section on there about the importance of the American dream. Does anybody believe in that nonsense anymore? I'm not so sure, especially not in the last 4 years. However, part of the sloganeering put a smile on my face. I found out that the Trump team wanted the slogan, Keep America Great. But it turns out that Biden's team bought the web domain for that and so managed to stymie them. But nonetheless, I would have to put Trump ahead on the sloganeering. But on policy, Biden, really impressive, Scott.
Yeah, but Liam, you don't win as the opposition necessarily with flash and spectacle. Trump is an exception. You win it with competence. So, for example, 1992, Bill Clinton's running against Big Bush, George H.W. Bush, and it's like we're in a economic downturn. We need someone to steady America. We need someone to pull America together after the Cold War. 2008, we're into another financial downturn. We've got the mess that is Iraq. Obama comes out with good slogan, hope and change, but it's competence. You do win it with policy intentions. We want to do something about healthcare. We want to do something about climate change. We want to do something about economic fairness. You don't do it with detail, though. So when you go to that Biden-Harris website, you got old school Biden. No more malarkey is from 2012 when he had a good debate against Paul Ryan as the vice president. You know, he is that person who's been in Washington for 40 years. The real problem for the Democrats or the challenge is not going to be in winning with this. It's going to be when the rubber hits the road, when they become an administration. And then it's like, okay, now you're not the opposition, you're in power. So what do we mean by Green New Deal? How do we balance economics, technology, environmental regulation to deal with climate change? How are you going to deal with expansion of Obamacare? Are you going to allow private insurers to continue? Or are you going to say they're part of the problem and you go to a single payer public system? How are you going to deal with all those social and racial matters that come out from the Black Lives Matter protest, which is, all right, if we're going to change policing, what's the lead going to be in terms of an emphasis on community safety and services rather than armed confrontation? You know, and that's something that's not just a national question. It's going to go through the states with Democrats there. But for right now, that's the challenge in 2021 if they're in. They got to get there first by not only winning the election, but by preventing Donald Trump from refusing to leave the White House.
Well, when I looked at, you know, how the Dems are doing over the last few days, one of the things I sensed was, even though the polls are looking good, there's an awful lot of nervousness. An awful lot of nervousness. Now, part of that, it must be 2016, right? And thinking, we don't want to get bitten again, don't want to get our hopes up. But it's also clearly because there's a concern around this discourse of voter fraud that President Trump has been pushing very, very hard. Now, this is not something I know much about, but my sense is that voter fraud is not a big issue in the United States. So this has been, if you like, a propaganda narrative that Trump has built up and that he's been pushing. And he's using the forces of the federal government to help him push this as well. I think this is starting to create real unease, and not just among the Dems. How worried should all voters be about this, do you think?
Oh, extremely worried. Let's be clear here. The difference between Donald Trump and other politicians is politicians can be devious and they can try to, you know, manipulate elections. Look up gerrymandering, folks. But Donald Trump's out front about it. Donald Trump has told you, I'm not going to announce I'm going to accept the outcome of the election. He put a mega donor in as head of the U.S. Postal Service, a guy that's given him millions of dollars, Louis DeJoy. And DeJoy immediately oversaw starting to remove sorting machines, removing drop boxes, in other words, preventing the ability to count ballots at the same time that Donald Trump was saying, oh, and by the way, all those ballots are fraudulent. Reality check, in the past 40 years across all U.S. elections, less than 1,200 fraudulent ballots.
So in short, the real fear is about a contested election, right? And I think most listeners will be aware that the last time that we had a contested election in the United States was in 2000, Al Gore versus George Bush. That came down to a few votes, a few ballots in Florida, which is also going to be an important state this time around. Gore lost. Some would contest that, but in the real world, he did lose. And he lost because that vote was eventually stopped by the Supreme Court. Now, you could see how worries might emerge coming into November and perhaps on this year. We've turned to someone who knows a lot about this. This is somebody who actually was present in 2000, advising Al Gore at that momentous time. Mike Feldman is a public relations and communications consultant. He was deputy director of the legislative affairs for Al Gore when he was vice president. And later, he was a key member of Gore's presidential campaign team in 2000, responsible for messaging and for strategy. Listen up. You've had a long association with the Democratic Party. I'm sure you're following events closely. Right now, Joe Biden has what looks like a healthy lead in the polls. Are you confident or are you nervous?
I think nervous might be the understatement of the millennium. We're all, I think everybody who's lived through even the last election cycle, but the last several election cycles, goes into this one with a healthy amount of skepticism about polling and a healthy appreciation for the process and the need to vote. So I would say I don't know a single person in my circle or in the Democratic Party right now that would describe themselves as confident.
Obviously, assuming that that comes out of the experience of 4 years ago, right? That's partly what rests with you. But could I push it just a little bit further? If it's not just remembering 4 years ago, what is there across the next 3, 4, 5 weeks that particularly makes you nervous? Where are you looking for a problem or an issue?
It's multi-layered this cycle. We've got several things to worry about. The president's health is a question. again, I hope that he recovers. It seems like he is recovering, but we haven't faced a situation where the nominee of a party, let alone the incumbent president, is going into the election with votes being cast with a condition that that could impair his ability to serve. Or God forbid, take his life. So I think there's an open question right now about that. And I think everybody's very nervous about the chaos that would ensue if for some reason the president became incapacitated. So that's the first window of concern. The second window of concern is the voting this year is going to be very different than recent cycles, not only because more Americans are already voting by mail or voting early, but because of the global pandemic, that's going to accelerate the number of people who plan to vote remotely or vote early. And there are questions about how and when and if those votes are going to be counted. Those concerns have been exacerbated by the president's own rhetoric. He said over and over again that he's very skeptical about mail-in voting. He's very skeptical about balloting that doesn't take place, at polling stations. He's cast doubt on that process. He's called it rigged. And the reality is, even if everything goes well, the states who run elections in this country, you know, each state runs their own election process. They vary on how and when those votes are counted. So it may be that election night or election day, we don't have a full picture of the electorate and how they voted. We've done some work with a group in the U.S. called Hawkfish, a data firm that has done some analysis of this. And they have shown that it's possible that up to 60-70% of the vote may be cast by mail-in ballot or early voting. And the breakdown of that vote is heavily Democratic. In other words, more Democrats are likely to vote by mail and vote earlier than Republicans. Republicans are more likely to vote day of. So it is possible, the way that votes are counted, that on election day, election eve, the overwhelming percentage of the vote may be Republican votes, but with only a small percentage of the overall electorate counted. And so you can see a scenario, one that I'm quite worried about, where the president claims victory with only 30 or 40% of the vote counted. And then as the votes come in, things begin to swing back to the Democratic side. Given the dry timber, the divisions, the cultural, political, economic, and racial divisions in our country right now, that is a recipe for disaster. So that is the second window of concern. The third window of concern is even if the vote is validated, even if the votes are counted, even if it becomes clear that Vice President Biden has won the election, President Trump has lost the election, there's no guarantee. In fact, there's some indication that the president won't accept those results or will contest them either rhetorically or legally. And so that, that brings us to the third area of concern. So to say that, things look good, we're feeling good, we'll know on election day, I don't believe that. And I think it's going to be a rough couple of months while we sort things out.
Mike, you know, we've got 7 million mail-in votes that apparently have already come in. And of those states that actually break it down by party, it looks like it's about a 2-to-1 margin in terms of Democrats versus Republicans in terms of party affiliation. Does that ease your concerns at all, or just simply add to them in that we might have the votes in already, but they won't be counted until a much later point?
It's reassuring to the extent that Democrats have, are voting early. They're not taking anything for granted. They're asking for their ballots and they're getting them in. It adds to the dynamic that I talked to you about earlier about how those votes will be counted, because in many states, those votes can't be counted until after the polls close on election night. So the larger that number is, the more uncertainty there will be, and the more it's likely that those states won't be fully determined until the day after or the election week. You have to understand that each of these states has different processes for counting the vote and varying levels of resources devoted to that. So we have to hope that every state is on their game and that everybody is ready to go and that can be done efficiently. Recent elections would call that into question.
you know, we're paying a lot of attention, understandably, to Trump versus Biden. I understand why. But do you have a similar set of concerns in terms of the Senate races, where we are talking about a fight for control of the chamber? Or is that somewhat insulated at this point from the mail-in voting fraud cry that's being spread?
No, it's potentially some of those states are also, and those statewide elections are also vulnerable to the same problem. And so we have the presidency, to your good point, we have the presidency at stake here, but we also have control of the Senate at stake. There are gubernatorial elections that are potentially, going to be that are going to be fought out not only on Election Day, but in the days following Election Day. And if states are close, in other words, if the race tightens and some of these states fall within the margin of error, then you also have potential for recount and legal battles in those states that are set up around the margin of vote and how those votes were cast. And we have seen that play before, unfortunately.
Yes, we have seen that play before. And it has to be said, you were close to the heart of the performance. We're talking about 2000, of course. And at the risk of traumatizing you, could you take us back there, at least to give us a sense of what really was at issue? And also, is it the case that maybe things were learned so that it's not done that way again?
Well, they should have been. I will say, going back to 2000, we knew the race was relatively close. We knew that the country was evenly divided. I don't think anybody could have predicted that the race would come down to a handful of votes in one state, and that it is possible. It still staggers me to even say this, but that the will of the American voter could be undermined by the process of how we conduct our elections. And that's what happened in 2000. There have been many studies about the standards for counting ballots and the recount and what counties were recounted. And then the Supreme Court stopped that recount. And we all know what happened since. But I would say that nobody disputes the fact that more people set out on Election Day in the state of Florida to vote for Al Gore than to vote for George Bush. And that was not the outcome. So whether it was the butterfly ballot in Palm Beach County, or various groups that were disenfranchised, or how they were counted, or hanging chads, or how the recount was conducted, the fact is that more people set out to vote for Gore than for Bush. And that wasn't the outcome of the election. And that is different than just the popular vote versus how the Electoral College worked. Vice President Gore won the popular vote handsomely. So when you think about that, that should have been an earthquake, and that should have resulted in massive, massive changes and reform. Now, voting has been updated. The process has been changed. We're all a little more leery of polling and exit polling, and the networks have been a little bit more careful about how they call a race. But we're having the same conversation today than we were having 20 years ago. And that's alarming.
Yeah. Just one thing coming out of that I'm curious about. As you say, a lot of studies done on that. I remember reading some years ago, maybe you can correct me, but I remember reading that Al Gore was not keen for people to go to the streets at that time. Whereas Republicans did go to the streets, they did protest. Now, we could be facing into protests off the back of this election as well. Do you think the Democrats need to get out there and contest in that fashion this time around?
There's a difference between pursuing the legal avenues available to a campaign to make sure that the rule of law is followed and that the electorate is fairly counted, and stirring up unrest. 2000 was very difficult. It was a hard-fought race. Some would say that the legal process afterwards was not necessarily fairly fought on both sides. There were lots of tactics used by the Republicans in that election that Democrats didn't use. And you can argue about whether or not they were successful or smart or shrewd or even strategic. But one thing is clear. In the end, the United States Supreme Court, in the case of Bush v. Gore, ended the recount and therefore ended the process by which the election was being counted. That night, the night of the Supreme Court decision, there was a conference call with Vice President Gore, and there were some people on that call who were calling for Vice President Gore to contest and to come out and claim that the Supreme Court decision was ill-advised and unfair. And he had every reason to do that because the fact is the decision was, it was curious in how the Supreme Court ruled on that. It failed to follow logic in terms of people who watched the court carefully, but he didn't. And he said on that call that there is, and this has been reported by others, there's very little room between the outcome of a Supreme Court decision and violent insurrection and chaos. And he followed the rule of law. He conceded the election, and the rest is history. I respect him for doing that. And especially now when we have the possibility that one of the contestants in this election does not respect the rule of law, is willing to press any button, and is willing to leverage any of the divisions in this country right now to his advantage. In the end, the rule of law is important. In fact, it's, you know, the only thing ultimately that matters if we're going to uphold our, you know, our democracy. And that's a huge concern going into this election.
If I can get you into possibly to read the other side with lessons learned, do you get the sense that the Trump camp, not Trump himself, but the Trump camp around him, have looked at Florida 2000 in terms of gaming out, taking this to the Supreme Court, which would explain in part why they want to get Amy Coney Barrett onto the bench before them? And is it really the case they may have gamed this out? So we go from the Brooks Brother riot, you know, John Bolton leading the crowd to knock down the doors and halt the recount in Florida, to actually taking, I don't want to say the word right, but let's say more direct action on the streets is one of their options.
I mean, there are two things. There is a legal battle. And by the way, I would say both parties have legal strategies, state by state legal strategies, to make sure that they're prepared this time. In 2000, I would say we weren't prepared. No one was prepared for you know, an election coming down to a handful of votes in one state. But I would say, given what the president has said, given the fact that he's already signaled that he's willing to take this to the courts, both sides have armies of lawyers that are prepared to contest this. And that could be difficult. It could be ugly. It could drag out the outcome of the election. And that's one concern. But the other is, to your point, the president has also encouraged his supporters to act outside of the legal process to make sure that the election, in his words, is fairly conducted. He's encouraged his supporters to go to the polls to make sure that votes are being cast correctly. It worries me because, you know, we've seen just in recent days a group of militia men in Michigan who were plotting to kidnap the governor. And you have already these groups that the president has been signaling to that are willing to operate outside of the legal process. You know, there is a lot of raw emotion and deep divisions out there right now in this country, and the president seems willing to exploit them. So what I worry about is a situation where there's a legal process going on, and then there's an extrajudicial process, a process going on that is not conducted by lawyers, but is conducted by people who feel passionately, some of whom may be armed, who are willing to take to the streets to make sure that their point of view is heard. I really worry about that. I worry about that, you know, in a way that I haven't in any previous election cycle.
If we could take you beyond what we hope is the election of a new president in January, let's say that is President Biden. What does that next 4 years mean, not just for America, but our focus today with you is on the Democratic Party? It has its divisions, there's no question. It's been holding together pretty well recently. Does it start to come a little bit apart, do you think?
I'm going to remain an optimist here against all odds. I hope that what comes out of this election is a little bit of a reset and a willingness for moderate voices in both parties to work together to try to advance an agenda that's embraced by both parties. And I say this, you know, Vice President Biden, who I had the privilege of working a little bit with when I worked in the Senate, and knowing his reputation, I think his instinct will be to reach across the party divide. And he has great relationships, personal relationships with senators and with other office holders, Republicans and Democrats. He's the kind of president that could help maybe heal some of those wounds. Having said that, the partisan division does not, you know, end with this election. The deep divisions in this country don't immediately go away. Those wounds are not healed. There's lots of things that will test that, including, by the way, President Trump himself, who will still have a Twitter account and his following. You know, the other thing that's very daunting about this election is almost no matter what the outcome is or how decisive the outcome is, more than half or slightly less than half of the country are going to feel like they were robbed and they were disenfranchised and that the things that they care about are at stake. And so bringing down the temperature a little bit and beginning to bring people together, I think, is going to be a really important mission for the next president.
Let me flip it to the other side real quick and watch your reach out then to, if we go with progressive as the general label, but that side of the party, do you go big on Green New Deal on an expansion of medical care from day one? Do you work more pragmatically and say we're going to go step by step and possibly use Vice President Harris as the liaison with those folks? What's the tactics?
I don't know. I mean, I would say climate is one of those issues, by the way, that is not, unfortunately, we're not in a position to be pragmatic about. The country is we've lost our leadership on that issue. And as you know well, this is a global issue. And every day, the true cost of climate is hitting home. It's hitting home in the Gulf Coast of the U.S. right now. I think they're going to have to move very quickly and decisively on that issue. Now, it may be that climate and infrastructure and an economic plan for a job creation plan could fit together in an omnibus package that would be palatable to a broad number of people. I think climate is one of those things that is going to have to be paired with other elements in order to get support for, federal legislation around it. But a lot has happened since 2009, when the last time that was advanced, 2009, 2010. The problem has gotten worse, and it's clearer and clearer to a larger number of people. And by the way, Trump's marginalization of the science and his, ignorance of the science has brought a lot of Republicans closer and closer to Democrats and saying, hey, there's something going on. We can't completely ignore it here. So I do think that there are areas where those things could be combined in order to make, kind of progressive change for the country.
Mike Feldman, thank you for your time. Thank you for your insights. Thank you for looking back to 2000. Thank you for looking forward to 2024, all in a short conversation. Thanks, Mike.
A real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This has been America Unfiltered, a fresh, raw look at American politics, foreign policy, and culture. Be sure to keep track of us through America Unfiltered on Twitter, through the Clinton Institute and EA Worldview on Facebook, and of course, coming to ucdclinton.ie for the daily best in commentary, podcast, and analysis. Stay safe, stay sane, and be decent to each other.